So I'm just going back to out of China. I think it was in China. They did not send them out with any protective gear or equipment. And then when the woman,
I don't know, but I have no network. Again, IT is going to fix that. That's done.
Oh, really? Did he say
thank that? You.
And it never had this issue, and so we did all that. I've never had an issue connecting to here.
Okay, everybody, if everybody's settled in, we're at 4 o'clock, and we have a quorum, so we are opening the February meeting of the Ashland Housing and Human Services Commission. Wow, that was a quietness.
That's right, with the Amy.
So, just like last week, we actually have a lot of things that are really interesting on the agenda today. So, as you can see how thick it is, we've got many things to discuss that are right in our sweet spot here. So, approval of the minutes.
I read them. They look real good. So, I'm happy to move to approve.
A second.
Good job, Liz.
Okay, we're looking for any amendments. So, all in favor of approving the minutes as proposed, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The minutes are approved. So then moving to the next piece is our public forum. So does any folks want to have any moments on the public forum? So we're going to welcome our new member and introduction. So, Echo, would you like to have everybody say who they are, or would you, then give your background?
I've been working on. I've Googled everybody.
Wow.
And I wanted to figure out who did we have in common, and a lot of us have people in common. So it'll take me a while to get names and faces reliably in my head, but I know half of you already.
We have these things.
Yeah, and I don't have one yet.
You will?
We know who you are.
Yeah. You will.
Oh, that's right. You don't have your little name
tag. Nobody forgets my name. They kind of assume things about me because my name is Echo Fields. Those assumptions are pretty much right. Except that I'm named after my maternal grandmother, who got named Echo in 1900.
Wow.
In rural Iowa.
Interesting.
She was Echo Lee, and I'm an Echo Ellen, after the Ellens after my other grandmother.
What town am I?
Emmitsburg. So not far from Sioux City. Any of you know that part of the world?
Mm-hmm. Is that where
you're from? Mm-hmm. So Rich and I go way back to the late 80s when I first lived in Ashland. So I grew up in Oklahoma City, working class. Could afford to go to college back in those days. Became a sociologist, went to grad school in Eugene, came down here for my first job in 1985, where I first encountered Rich doing the Oregon Fair Share, as it was known back in the day. And then I went away for about 8 years in the 90s and was teaching at a small Franciscan Catholic liberal arts college in Sioux City, Iowa. With good Franciscan nuns who would do things like chain themselves to the sack base in Omaha to protest nuclear war. So those kinds of Catholics. I didn't know anything about Catholicism when I took that job, and they didn't care at that time. They hired me anyway. But I kept all my Oregon connections because I really wanted to be here. Oregon's kind of my place. I needed to be where there were hippies. And I still had connections at SOU from when I was there before. And a position opened up that was really kind of focused on doing things that this commission is focused on. So I was the co-program coordinator for our human service major, which is an interdisciplinary psychology, sociology program on the sociology side. Taught lots of classes on public policy relating to housing, health, welfare, homelessness, foster care, child abuse, neglect, that whole range of things. Courses in community development, community studies, community organizing. Rich has taught me more than he'll ever know. He's way gifted in ways that I'm not. So I tell him this all the time just to embarrass him. Sent him some good students over the years, happy to say. And I also taught a lot of stuff on organizational sociology and bureaucracy. Because the two ways that we get things done in the world is by grassroots community organizing from the bottom up and from capturing organizations, as Trump has done, in my view, on the wrong side of the fence, but capturing organizations and bureaucracy to affect change through those channels. So both top-down and bottom-up, and I'm pretty schooled in both strategies for doing that. And I'm president of a homeowners association, so I deal with housing issues in that regard. And I met Jackie a couple years ago when she and Jim first came to town. Gina and I have a lot of people in common. Linda and I have a couple of people in common.
So
anything else? Should I say anything else?
I think you got it. I think we're trusting that you Google this all enough.
I did.
To not have to do introductions.
I did,
if that's okay,
I
unless
know,
people want to jump
so
in.
I'm like, so you know Eva. I work with Eva. And I have good Presbyterian friends. And a former student of mine went to Pacific School of Religion. And I know what you do.
Gina.
So we show up for the same things. Mm-hmm. And let's see, and Linda, La Clinica, which I knew when it was very small and underfunded and up there on the whole highway. Yeah, so much has changed with that. How am I doing?
Great.
Okay.
Pretty good. And Liz?
Liz, I think I did.
That's okay.
She holds us all together because that's how we actually communicate with the outer world, is through her excellent notes. So I guess we will move on to the Boise decision.
We were going to put it
on the agenda last time and we didn't have time for it. So now we have time for it, and we do have a study session coming up next Monday. So are there people that would like to comment on that in relation to where we are in Ashland?
Who's the study session
with? Well, is
well, it's the Boise decision, and I think it's Dave Lohman who's called it, to
right.
talk about the legality of criminalizing homelessness.
Well, yeah, I
yeah.
Decision,
okay. Yeah.
But
is it on our...
Is this the City Council study
session? Uh-huh.
The City Council
is,
study
yeah.
session next Monday at
on
5.
The Boise
no.
Well, it's really not. I mean, I think it's the discussion that they had regarding the Boise decision at the council meeting, and then they were trying to figure out how they should move forward with it. And one of the suggestions, I think, as you may all remember from last time, was that one of the options was maybe to send it here and then have this group come back at a later date at a study session to talk to the council. But I think what they've decided to do is have Dave Lohman do a presentation on homeless resources that are available, what the city's already doing and how that works. And I think as part of that, mm-hmm. they have Kelly and Dave, or maybe just Kelly, has put out a call mm-hmm. to homelessness service providers to come to the meeting and talk a little bit about what they do. Mm-hmm.
Does anybody know what the impact would be on Ashland given the Supreme Court?
Well, I believe that Dave Lohman...
I mean, what are we doing to this now illegal?
Well, I don't think Ashland is doing anything that's illegal. Okay. That's the conclusion that Dave came to, is that Ashland does not, it's, what is it?
Criminalize.
Criminalize.
Give tickets specifically on homelessness.
Right, we don't jail people. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but when I travel to other cities, I see homeless people on the street sleeping, and I don't see it that often here.
Correct.
And I don't know where we are on that.
Well, Heidi can give it a.
Well, I believe that as long as someone lays down to sleep without a blanket, they're not ticketed. But if they have a blanket, then they're ticketed. That's
what? I understand. What?
Yes, that's right.
And that is what?
The criteria, the right to sleep.
Yeah.
The criteria, it doesn't even, they don't even need to be asleep. They need to lie down and not have the means to find shelter. That's the criteria. Well,
I have many strong feelings about what we do around the criminalization of sleep and the right to rest. But
I mean, the homeless will tell you that they're rousted, they cannot sleep that well. So whatever rationale, that is what we do. Under the Boise decision, on the face of it, it would say that is illegal unless you provide people the spaces. But the city attorney has said it doesn't qualify as a technicality.
For criminalizing.
That word. Mm-hmm. And almost all the cities that are affected that are not changing because they think that there's a legal way out of that and they're not affected by it. And Ashland would be one of those.
So they say they're not arresting them. They're just
ticketing them.
Rousting them.
They're not even ticketing them. They're not criminalizing it. There's no ticket.
And you don't pay the fine.
Yeah. Ty will be talking about that because
some are. They're asking them to move it along.
Okay, so let's get back to order in terms of that. So the last question, you had a question?
No, Jackie said Ty will be talking about it.
I don't know that specifically that he's going to be on the agenda, but I know he has been in the back of the room and then brought forward to explain, because that's often the question that comes from the council is, well, what do you mean by criminalized? So, Chief of Police, would you please come here and tell me what's the definition in your world of what that means? Because to an attorney, criminalizing means something totally different. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening too is in Grants Pass, there's a case right now. Class action suit, so you know about that. So there's at least three people that are taking Grants Pass to case for the same kind of reason, because they just don't have shelters. And the real problem is they established their own ordinance that said you cannot sleep or camp on any public domain in our city. And then they said, because we're going to have all these shelters, we're going to develop all these locations. And that was over a year ago, and they've done basically nothing is what I understand. So now they're starting to have kind of a good case, because the city has this ordinance that says we will, you know, take these actions in a criminal fashion, and yet they're not providing any. And they're our neighbors, so that's going to be really interesting to see.
Can I say one thing? Grants Pass has now opened a warming station.
I saw that. I did see that. That's right. I did see that. So at least they can sit. I mean,
sit. Yeah.
Let me grab a blanket.
Yeah.
I think statewide, many of the cities have taken the position, unless you sue us, we're not changing. So
unless you're what, we're not changing it?
Unless you get sued in court.
Oh.
The court is where they think they can continue the status quo unless somebody takes them to court to force them to change that. So there hasn't been very many cities that have reacted to this in another way.
So. And we don't have the ordinances like Grants Pass does, so that's part of the difference. So I'm going to be there to learn, to understand, to try to get the whole picture. Yeah.
I would just say that within the city council, there's some feeling that the subject of the event has to do with what are the barriers and what are the gaps in homeless services. Mm-hmm. That's what. So not being a city council, but we don't have our liaison, I don't know what the answer is. So there has been a call to people who were homeless advocates to be there, mm-hmm. but at a study session, you don't get to talk. So it's a little bit of a conundrum. But
the winter shelter closes too. April 1st, doors are shut.
Yep.
So that's something that I hope will come up, you know, at the meeting, so people realize there is no more winter shelter starting April 1st until November 1st.
That study session starts at 5.
5:30, I think.
I have bad information, I'm afraid, so go look at it.
Yeah, I think they start at 5:30.
That's what I have in my book.
Is it here? Or
no,
it's at the council chamber site.
Which is nice, because that would be way too many people for the study room.
Yeah.
Comfortable.
So did that clear us up of what we're looking at for that issue?
Jackie, do you want to give us... or somebody want to be in charge of giving us a report about this?
I'd be happy to.
We didn't do it in March because I think our March agenda is pretty full, but maybe in April, which I know is
just on what went on.
Sure.
Oh, sure. Happy to. Yeah.
And computer, Gary.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, then we'll go to the next one, which is the utility bill work group discussion. And I think there's a little bit of notes in there from it. I got to say that, and Aaron, you can jump in too, because that group is outstanding.
Yeah.
And the work that's been laid out is excellent. It included Kelly and John and Ken and Aaron and myself. And
they're, Ken Gudger. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Ken Gudger. Right. And John Engelhart from the St. Vincent's. Mm-hmm. And those folks are heavy-duty policy data quizzes, I guess, would be the things. And so we've been looking at all the details of what has happened with why we have such a huge spike in utility rates. And we're now at the point of making some recommendations around some both city policies and community possibilities that would address that issue. And that would be coming back to us at the next meeting. Are we filled up?
Yeah. It'd have to be April. We're getting a lot
March
of
April. March is locked in.
What?
Yeah, March is full up.
Okay. Well, we will. It may be that what we could at least do is we have a memo that would outline it, and we can look at it. And it's not something that has to happen exactly immediately, but... you can look at the notes that were provided to people, and it's a combination of looking at how the city is giving out notices to people, ways that we could improve it so that people would get them in a more reasonable fashion and then have a better ability to get support from the support groups that are out there. And then the second part of that is there a way to increase the resources that those groups have to be able to provide those necessary support for outstanding bills? And that all of those are really excellent, but it'll be that kind of partnership, if we can do it, between the city and community groups to see how we can pull all those together.
Okay.
Rich?
Yeah.
Did you notice the news that the Trump administration is proposing to pull money out of the low-income heating program to help pay for the corona response?
Which program?
The low-income heating assistance program. Oh.
LEAP.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was the day before yesterday. It was in the news.
Everybody knows that that is like a critical part of our safety net that's out there, is, and it works well in Southern Oregon.
Did you talk about adjusting the rates in any way?
Yes. About the number, the rate at which people qualify for it and how much money they get for it, is that what you're referring to?
Well, the city's utility fees. Is there any discussion of creating different categories of people who would pay less?
Oh, no, I think that there was discussion on that of different categories, because one of the things that was brought up is that some of the shutoffs are not a number of them. Now, I think that Kelly mentioned seeing an increase of people who are not low income, but just simply are forgetting to pay their bill. And which I think that in our society now, where so many of us set up things on a monthly, that it's easy to do that. And there was a little bit of discussion of trying to see if they could find out which group is the low income people who have gotten assistance before, and maybe providing some sort of extra support there. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think the key was that I don't think that group is prepared to say we need to change the fee structure of the city, how much money they raise.
Like for senior disabled?
Well, you could give, yes, no, all that is open. Mm-hmm.
But you have to apply for that.
You have to apply for it, right. And so the notion about how you get people to apply for it and all of that, but the actual fee structure that you're charged, they...
Oh, is that what you're asking?
We're not going to change...
Yeah.
They're going
to... Okay, sorry.
They're
going to...
Our principle was the city is going to raise the same amount of money on the utility bills, but we would have a fund... That's the way it is now, and we have a fund that supports people for that. We're not going to reduce people's bill automatically. They're going to get the same bills, but we're going to be able to provide support for people to do that. Is that clear? I don't.
Right.
No?
I understood.
No.
Yep. So one thing that troubled me as I was reading this is we give CDBG funds and other funds to social service agencies who then pay some of these bills.
Correct.
So basically, the city is paying other agencies to pay them back for overcharging, in my opinion, overcharging people who are in need.
Well, I think, so you're saying that what we need to do is change the utility bill that you get in a way that doesn't bill certain people money. And the city, I think, is going to fight that. They would say,
No. That's not what I'm saying. I think we need to have different tiers. So if you're a senior or a disabled person, you automatically get...
Less.
Are charged less. Not that you're charged the full amount and a social service agency comes in and helps you afford that. That seems...
Very
strange. I think that is a larger question that I don't think the city, from the standpoint of Kelly being part of it, I didn't, her thing was we're not going there.
Yeah.
We can fight for that. That's changing somehow the rates of how your people get a different size bill because of a certain category. And I'd be for it. I'm just saying that the city is going to not view that favorably, where they might view favorably putting more money into putting it back.
Well, I have to jump on what Heidi said, because that doesn't make sense. And there's so many, what, from my experience, that not only seniors, the young people who can't live here because they can't afford to pay rent and utilities. I mean, when somebody has a $200+ utility bill a month, that's ridiculous. But yet still, we want to have young people, and we want to, I believe that's a very important issue that needs to be brought up. And I don't know how we can bring that up or email that or start that ball.
The time to bring that up was when the council was looking at raising the rates. And there were a number of people, myself included, who addressed some of those issues. And it still passed.
So one of the things I just want to say, though, there's some hope in all of this, I think. I talked with Ken Gudger just on Tuesday night about what the committee is doing. I was going to be on the group, and then I couldn't because of the date. But Ken is so capable working with John. So the door hangers, they're going to redo that so it clearly has correct organizations that can immediately help the person. There's a number to call that day that can help them. Now, one of them is Aura, and it's Monday. It's only during the week, right, Monday through Friday, 9 to 2. But it's someone who will answer the phone and immediately start to help them. It also helps seniors. So you're looking at individual people who are having the problems. It's not all seniors who have disabilities. It's not all young people who are making a certain income. So the idea is to immediately help the people who are suddenly in crisis because of the utility bill. So I realize that doesn't address the high utility bill. I get that. But I think this is going to be much better. The other thing was there was an additional $10 per person that was added on because of the robocalling. And so they're trying to get back to these door hangers and more touch the person, you know, closer to saying, here's where you can get help, here's who you can call. So that's what they're going to try to do. And it was such a big change when they went to the robocalling that they're now thinking that really caused a big problem in not getting to people soon enough so that they could ask for help.
So one of the issues around what you're suggesting is, like, the LEAP program has had 50 years of easy work, and it's because the people that administer it do the selection of people, and it's every year you got to have, so there's a whole bureaucracy of people set up to say you're low income this right now, you might not be low income next year, and that you fit that category, and then you get the services. Unless the city sets up that bureaucracy, which costs them a gajillion amount of dollars, it's much easier to target the money to the people that really, just seniors is a simple one. There's probably 80% of the seniors, or a good percentage of seniors, are making a lot of money and pay their bills. And then there's a percentage, and you have to have somebody that sits there and sorts that out for every month as you go along.
And the senior center makes referrals to the ELEAP program and identifies a lot of those seniors who are having trouble too.
Yeah.
So I think that what Heidi's bringing up is the issue behind all of this, which is sort of in your notes. If you have to pay $99 right. before you ever use any electricity,
right.
That's a problem that the entire citizenry,
right.
I'm
correct.
Not low income, but I have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that needs to be said. Frequently.
It's a different issue,
yeah.
and it's an issue of the whole governance of Ashland, and obviously, but there are also laws that reflect what kinds of fees that you can put on. So it's not just as simple as we're going to wipe them all out. And with the city in a kind of a tough spot, I think that's where we're at. That's not the purview of this committee, I don't think, is to say we're going to do that. We're leaving the city's billing and that, and you know, how much they charge, that's, we're not taking that on. Now, somebody can, but.
It's a factor.
It is absolutely a factor, and we sat there in the meeting and said, that's a big factor, and then we said, we're not going to be able to change it.
Okay. I think we have to keep saying it. Even if it's not going to change anything, it's a factor, and it's a real one, and it's one that the city has consistently chosen over time
to enact. And it's damaging. It's damaging to young people. It's damaging to seniors. It's damaging to the citizenry, and the citizenry doesn't like it.
Right. And so I would just say the citizenry should get together a group that looks at the utility structure of Ashland, and that would be a good thing to do. We were looking at the number of low-income people that are being displaced by shutoffs, and how can we actually make, I think, a big step forward in how we do that. And so that's, I think, what we're getting. I mean, I would like to be on that committee, but I think our group is where we're at.
I actually had a side discussion about this particular issue with a senior who's involved in a lot of different things. And two of the things that she pointed out was that for seniors on a fixed income, an issue is tax assessments, which continuously go up. But those can actually be deferred for seniors at the state level. I mean, that money does have to come back at some point, but for seniors it could be at the sale of their house. And not the most ideal thing, but if you're on a fixed income, that helps. And one of the things that we talked about at that time was whether there could be a deferred fee structure for a utility bill situation for seniors in that same way. The program for deferred taxes is run by the state. So that's kind of a strange, like, you know, comes through the state and then it goes back. The county always gets their money, so they'll get their money eventually. But that was a suggestion that she had, so that maybe you could freeze it at that $99, you know, piece. And then hereafter, you know, those fees.
Like rent control.
Kind of.
But utility control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where it would still maybe be like the county thing where it goes... you know, it accrues fees against you, but you don't have to pay them
until you sell your house or die. House.
Yeah, but what if you rent? I mean,
run. But it doesn't solve the issue of rent for some people in that sense. But I don't know if that would be a different option. That sort of freezing that structure for certain people or asking for that deferment. But I thought that was an interesting solution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, then let's move to number 6, our grant meeting schedule.
So traditionally you guys have enjoyed having an additional meeting outside of your regular meeting schedule to discuss discuss the grants, the questions that you'll ask, how the meeting will be structured. And this year, I mean, as you may have noticed, we received 2 applications. One is from ORA, which is a new application. St. Vincent de Paul did not apply this year. They are not, they are getting out of the rent utility assistant business for now, from us anyway. And also we received an application from Maslow, which we have in the past. And we did not receive any capital applications, and we did not, we have some, I'll come back next month with a proposal for you because we still have to spend that money. But anyhow, this this Friday is the deadline for Affordable Housing Trust Fund applications. So those are the 2 applications, the packets that you guys will need to look at. As far as I know, I've only heard from 1 applicant. I don't know that there are any other applicants. I don't know that, because some people could just apply and have never talked to me, which would be fine, too. I wouldn't know about them. So until Friday, I will not know whether we have any Housing Trust Fund applications. So potentially 2, or maybe 3, or maybe more. But that seems kind of unlikely. So it's up to you whether you want to schedule an additional meeting to talk about the application after you have read them, the 2 that we have, or however many we end up with, and come up, generate the questions for the applicants, however you want to do that. So, it's up to you guys.
I don't feel like 2 applicants is going to require us to have another meeting.
Right.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, if a whole bunch came in for the Housing Trust Fund, surprisingly, that might change it, but
right.
We could manage.
I agree.
And that there are applications that we've somewhat seen before. I mean, the lower one is newer, but it's doing an activity that you've seen before.
The issue I have is in years past, we have read the application and come in and did the work in front of the applicants, never having a chance to interact. And regardless of how many applicants, I think it was very helpful to be able to have time and then read and discuss this. And people had different takes on this. So,
are you talking about the social service grants?
I'm talking about, well, not social service and CDBG, and if we have them, it's just you're doing it cold and unprepared. So yeah, I think we need something.
So one option, if there's only two applicants, is to have them come in at 5. We meet at 4 and have some time to work on it before we ask applicants to come in.
The other, this might.
We've given a whole meeting to it in the past.
The other thing that's different about the CDBG is that we get a recommendation from the staff, which we don't get on the other one.
That's true.
And sometimes those recommendations are, we don't change them because they're kind of obvious. And I don't know exactly whether we could say that on this one, but I agree there is a certain point if it wasn't obvious and there was a severe difference that we were arguing over, that would be a little embarrassing, but I'm not against it. But anyway, that's just my thought.
When does the staff recommendation come out?
Well, I usually just send it out with your packet, but I haven't heard one yet or talked to Bill or Brandon. We haven't evaluated them. They said there's only two, and I think the big challenge will be that they both have asked, I think, for the full amount available.
Right.
So there will be a decision piece because obviously it's still at just 15%. So there will have to be a division of the funding if both were awarded. So, you know, that's probably the only evaluation piece. The activities are the same as the activities we've had in the past. Even Aurora is now going to be doing the French assistant program, and it's a little more nuanced than the St. Vincent de Paul program, but it's still a similar activity. So, yeah, I can get it out maybe next week. It depends on when I can meet with Bill and Brandon.
So, Tom, are you suggesting that we should have a second meeting?
Well, that's what I was suggesting.
Yeah, okay.
It's really also a matter of timeline. When are we going to be, when's the meeting going to be? Our regular time in March?
Yes.
So sometime between now and then, we need to review two applications, we think.
Mm-hmm. At least two.
At least two.
Potentially three.
I kind of like Linda's idea of meeting at 4 and inviting the applicants at 5 and having an hour to discuss it. Because with two applications, even if it's 3 or 4, I think we can get through that.
I think time-wise, it'll be really manageable. There is another thing on our agenda, which is this thing that we're talking about tonight, which is why I brought it tonight, but we do have to have it at the same, just because that's how it's advertised, and it needs to be a public hearing. Traditionally, we have had no one come forward at the public hearing, so that's not time-wise, it's not an issue. But I think, with 2 or 3, even 4 applicants, if we gave them, 10 minutes each, that would take up the second half of the meeting. We'll go over this tonight, and then I'll just have a little update for you next time. So that could be very brief. So, you could probably spend 45 minutes on this topic, from like 4 to 4:45, and then maybe 15 minutes on the consolidated plan, and then from 5 o'clock on, it could be the CDBG and Affordable Housing Trust Fund applicant presentations, questions, and then your recommendation. So you have an hour for all of that. Does that feel like it's enough time?
Well, if we're all prepared and read these, and
sure,
I think we could get through it.
Would we get the Affordable Housing Trust Fund application before the meeting?
Yes. So I would just send those out in the same way that I did the applications. We'd probably post them online, and then I'll send you a link. And I do have hard copies. I just usually put them all in the book. But I can give you a hard copy whenever you
want. Can you also view the PDF file in an email?
Yes. I can do that.
That was
very helpful.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can absolutely do that.
Okay. So the other thing that was very helpful last year was the scoring sheet that you put together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would be really helpful to, if you're willing to do that again.
Well, it shouldn't be as... I mean, well, you did it for the social service.
Yeah, social service.
Much bigger piece.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's necessary.
So we have two evaluation forms. One for CDBG, which is pretty simplistic. In the past, I think people have sort of complained about how simple it is. And then the one for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund is similar to the CDBG one, also very simple. I mean, it's essentially making out, you know, the criteria that's identified in the ordinance or the resolution, and then sort of giving it numbers. But like I said, you're welcome to use any evaluation criteria that you want. I mean, those are just the things that are spelled out.
Why so few on the Affordable Trust Fund? Why so few applicants?
That one I don't know, and I'm so surprised. And that's something that we can talk about certainly when I go over the consolidated plan.
The total amount available on that, on the trust funds, is what?
I don't know.
100-something?
Oh, yeah, it's like 200,000. Like a little over 200. 214?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were you surprised?
So few applicants.
Oh. Yeah.
And, you know,
did we publish that?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is when I was saying that we could talk about it further in the consolidated plan update piece. It's really, in the big context, you know, our consolidated plan sets out these, like, goals, and it's based on our needs, and we identify that there's all these needs that the community says we have, and agencies say we have, and data says that we have. But we don't do any of those things, right? We are reliant on organizations outside of the city to apply to do those things. And while we can say, like, if you come in with an affordable housing application, you know, we're going to give you a sort of number one rating because that's what we really need, what we really want. But those projects are pretty few and far between, really. I mean, it takes years to get them together. They're applying competitively at the state. They're, you know, competing with other applicants in different arenas for that money. And then the property piece is huge. Like,
yeah.
And then the other piece that I mentioned specifically in the consolidated plan is that there are a lot of federal regulations that are deterrents for affordable housing providers. I mean, to the point that last year we couldn't give away the money. Like, literally, here's this money. I know you didn't ask for it, but we'll give it to you. And then having them say, no, I don't want it, because if I take your money, it changed my project, and now it's going to cost me twice as much or more to do this project because of this federal funding. But Affordable Housing Trust Fund doesn't have any of that.
Yeah,
and that's where, you know, I thought, well, at least someone will apply for that. And like I said, maybe they will.
And the deadline is?
Friday.
Tomorrow.
But let me just add one thing about the structure for the Housing Trust Fund. Has 10% can be non-competitive. So 10% of whatever that total is, it's just somebody coming to us saying, here's a need, and we could redo that. And that doesn't fit any timeline whatsoever.
Any time.
Right. And the rest of the timeline is really up to us in the city in terms of the Housing Trust Fund. CDBG has a little bit more structured timeline in terms of that. So as long as we had a competitive ask that people are going to be applying competitively if we're not determined to one specific timeline.
I think the hard part, you have something more to say.
Well, I'm concerned that if we don't have applicants for this, that it's going to be taken away from us.
Correct.
And,
yes.
Who else applied other than Columbia Care for the first code? Do you remember?
I think Habitat for Humanity purchased that piece of property on Nevada Street, and Aura applied as well.
Can we reach out to them?
After, so here's one of the, there's a lot of different directions we could go. What I wanted to say briefly, am I going to forget it? I'm slipping out of my mind as I chatter. One of our big issues is that we always envisioned offering the trust fund money in conjunction with the CDBG so that they could be put together, so it would be more money, so it would be more of an inducement to do the project, right? So, this year we had $500,000. Like, we're a tiny, tiny town. Yeah. That's a lot of money for us. Like, a lot. You know, we were all envious of Medford's $1 million, but, not even less than half the size. Yeah. And we had that much money, but it didn't bring anybody to the table. And that's the scary part. And so there are some things that we could look at, one of which is sort of what Rich was saying, that we don't have to award all the money. We can sit on it, especially the trust fund money. We could sit on that. That's okay. And we could potentially sort of look at cultivating a bigger project in the future. The CDBG money, though, we can't sit on because it is time sensitive, but only to a certain extent. It's like there's an amount we can carry over each year and get away with it for a while, but not all the time. And we're already 1 year into a workout plan where our plan was to give it to Columbia Care, and that didn't work. I did try to give it to Columbia Care again this year. I talked to them extensively, and actually this time it was a separate federal regulation that derailed it. It was the Davis-Bacon wage rates. We talked extensively with the Housing Authority, and the reason was because these two projects are already going, right? Like, this is easy. We're not waiting to buy land. We're not waiting for planning approvals. We're not waiting for zone changes or annexations. Their environmental reviews are done, so we don't have to, we don't have to wait on that because that's another big time-lapse piece. But they both said no. The Housing Authority said their investors would walk away if they took a dime of this money.
I like the idea of taking the initiative of not awarding it and making sure the city council knows that we have a bigger project in mind. And so it's not seen as, they didn't use it.
Okay. Heidi.
I noticed in Maslow's application for CDBG funds, they mentioned housing, they plan to offer housing in one of the
Snowberry.
Yeah. How can they be guaranteed that they'll get their families in there?
They'll lease it from the Housing Authority.
They'll do what?
They'll lease it. They're going to lease a certain number of units from the Housing Authority.
Wouldn't that qualify for Housing Trust Fund?
Yeah. They must have, I think they have an agreement. It's through the continuum of care. They're working together through the continuum of care. So they have an agreement somehow outside of us to do that. But yeah, a leasing model is something that's done commonly, at least with HUD continuum of care funds for leasing units. And so one of the things that I am suggesting for our next 5-year consolidated plan as we look at our goals and outcomes is that we're going to shift away from development of affordable housing because we're just not getting it. We're not making those targets. Interestingly enough, we'll get it next year, except we didn't put any of our CDBG money in it. But what we do get is a lot of rehab because that's the easy thing to do, and it's still housing. Existing units don't have to go through the same environmental review project. especially if there's less than four of them. They don't trigger Davis-Bacon wage rates. So there's a bunch of things, and that's the activity we've had the most of. A leasing model would be the same way. So it's sort of looking at how do we get housing without sort of triggering those big environmental review costs. But the other piece that I would say is that there is a capacity issue, because like I said, we don't do the housing. The capacity piece comes in with the nonprofit providers who do the housing.
Correct.
And so whether they, you know, are able to take on these new projects at this time, I mean, I think everyone's really busy right now because they've got a lot going on. Like, I think, you know, Ulrich's got the winter shelter. I mean, they want to do housing in the future, but there's a right time for everything. So the hard part for us is it's not always going to be every year, like you were saying, but there may be some years. And that's the part where I think we've got to try to figure out how to plan and hold on for that, try to keep our amount of money but not go over.
Right. I'll call on myself. I think this is one of the issues that I'm really concerned about is the capacity of what we have out there. We don't have enough people able to do the work.
Right.
And I just want to say that one of the things that is built into the Housing Trust Fund is the ability to start up new organizations. But that's a big deal. But it just, I mean, we really have a free hand with the Housing Trust Fund if we had the people that were into it.
But what we really need is someone who can take both those funds and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, land acquisition, building acquisition, I mean, land acquisition can be tricky because it still has some environmental review pieces, and that people who are buying the land can't commit to it. They can put down a nominal amount. We have an agreement, a purchase and sale agreement that we give grantees that says, you can only say, we may buy this. And you have to give the eminent domain disclaimer that you don't have the right of it. Like, there's all these things. And this is the agreement you have to make with a potential seller until we can go through the entire environmental review process, which, depending, can take 3 months. So a seller has to wait for that time. And it could come out that, like, sorry, you know, this doesn't meet the criteria set out by the federal government, and we can't expend CDBG funds on this project, or there may be some mitigation that has to be done, or there may be situations where the mitigation is so great that we couldn't do it, and you could not fund affordable housing or build affordable housing.
So let me see if I got a consensus about where we're going to meet next time. We're not going to put in an extra meeting, but we're going to do a 4 and 5 kind of split meeting, and that one of our concerns is the Housing Trust Fund, that we want to go forward with that even if we are short of people applying for it now.
What do you mean go forward?
Well, part of it is when do you encourage, in other words, this says cut off on Friday, does that mean for 2 more years? Or do we, because there has to be except for the 10%, it has to be a competitive process. That means it has to be open to other people.
But because it is a city resolution, the city council can decide at any time to offer that money should we ask them. So if there was a project that was coming online, I think, and this is the piece that we're missing at this point, is that if there is a project that arises, because we have in the past been very sorry that we did not have discretionary funds to move forward with something when it became available. And that's what the NOFA 10% process is about. It's like, if this project is, you know, this piece of property is available and this affordable housing provider has an option to buy it, but they need to do, you know, some preliminary environmental review work, or they need to do appraisals or whatever, they can come to us and say, we need some money so that we can, you know, not put out money of our own, but like find out whether this is going to be feasible for us to move forward with. And that's what that 10% is available for. So you can move quickly, and then we can theoretically get you lined up to buy it with CDBG funds or with a combination. But we can also say, this is an opportunity, and if we can't move forward with this piece of property, you know, in the next couple of months, then we're going to lose it. We could go to the council and ask them to make the funding that's available outside of the regular grant.
I think you got to leave some flexibility. Oh, sorry.
And we can do that before the 2 years.
I mean, we can do it theoretically at any time as an opportunity arose.
Comes whenever.
That's what I think. You need the flexibility.
Okay.
That's what. Yeah.
We could make it one of our goals to reach out to our community and advertise that these funds are available, mm-hmm. and actively look for people, organizations
correct.
To use it. And if it's one of our active goals, then we could make the legitimate case to the council that we are working on this.
I'm not sure if this is against the rules, but we have had success conducting workshops or information, making information available to and various populations. If we could, as a former director of an agency, I had tons of things on my plate, and it was, oh, is it CDBG time? It wasn't up there in big letters. Could we have a plan to help organizations understand how they could combine CDBG with a trust fund and get them thinking about this for future years?
Well, I think, your idea and Heidi's ideas are really good, and I would think putting them together would be helpful. So one of the things that the Jackson County Continuum of Care has done is they created what they're calling the Pipeline Subcommittee, and it's essentially, let's start talking about projects and see who's sort of ready, and then create a pipeline of projects. Like, obviously not everyone's going to be ready right now, but sort of create ideas so that by the time the funding comes around, we can start saying, okay, let's move this forward. This is really ready to go, and, this is fully formed now, and people have time on their schedules. So it's sort of mapping out a longer range plan for, okay, here's how we're going to spend the money for the next 5 or 6 years, because we've got our projects lined up and we've got our providers in the windows where their capacity is going to be available for these projects. So I really liked that idea, and I'm kind of realizing that, it's been very hit and miss for us. And some years it's great because the housing authority's got a project and they'll come in, although, like I said, now everyone's telling me they don't want the CDBG. There are pieces of the CDBG which are, like I said, the environmental review piece, the expenses can be very weird, and only the developer can sort of decide for themselves whether they want to go through that process. Most of the developers I have worked with for a number of years, and I've talked with them extensively, and I'm very available to talk about how we can bring things together and how we can make it work. I think I'm just not sure people are really on board with CDBG right now, and they're not going to change it, so that's the thing. I have a perpetual argument with HUD and the developers, but HUD understands that I can't give this money away on a rainy day, but I know you can't make it any different.
Okay, so are we all good?
Okay.
I like the pipeline idea a lot.
I do too,
because
yeah.
That really gives a very clear explanation of why we need to keep the funds. We're clear about this is going to happen next year, it's going to happen 2 years from now. I think that would be helpful to the agencies, and it would certainly be helpful for keeping the trust fund dedicated to housing.
Okay.
Well, I like the idea of having a separate meeting, too, or having some sort of meeting where we sort of generate, like, here's the funding, here's what we can do with it, here are the sort of...
Here's how you piece it together.
Yeah, and then, can we all come together and talk about projects that you guys have in mind and what you think your timelines for those and what you think you'll need and the pieces you have to get through. And one thing, I'll just say it openly, is that, I think Aura has expressed an interest in buying the
right.
But, and I know that's a whole other thing, and that's not even anywhere near happening.
We're trying to stay alive with the services we're providing to shelter.
And
yes,
it's
and
hard
so
to get
that's
in that
where
pipeline.
we we've got to keep the capacity available or we're going to end up closing. So to go farther and look at land development and getting through all of that, we're starting to realize we need to provide the navigation services, you know, to people, but we need somebody else to be in the building and figuring all that out. The Jason Elzies of the world.
Well, it really made me think of Rob Justice when he came down and how he had partnered with a church to build the affordable housing component that could be managed by a separate agency but give continuous funding to the church.
There you go.
And I was thinking about how the church owns all three parcels. And if there was a way that someone could sponsor that or be the managing partner, but not purchase the land.
Right.
Could you have a lease or the church could be getting some of the money and we'd still get our housing. That's a pretty big...
It's that partnership. So the pipeline sounds so great because we want a partner.
Yeah.
It's just that we're beginning to see we're trying to keep humans off the sidewalk, in the shelter, and then get them out of crisis, you know, through the navigation and all the resources, and keep them in their homes if they have a home, you know. So we're good at that. So that's why, you know, St. Vincent de Paul is going, go, Aura, you know. But we need to be partners with somebody that can build.
And yet Maslow is looking to create their own housing.
By leasing.
Leasing.
Yeah. So that's sort of new to me. I'm certainly going to take that idea back.
Well, and leasing is a great option, but you still got to have units to lease.
Yeah.
But what?
You still got to have units to lease.
In Ashland.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's, we're back to the who develops.
We're not good at that.
Well, and that's the thing, where we have this capacity issue and we need to figure out who.
It's so frustrating.
Well, it's very frustrating because it's actually not, it's like our role. We're not housing developers, but it's the necessary evil. Okay, so anyway, I don't know if you want to move on to this, which is where we'll talk about it more.
I'm having a feeling we're ready to move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one is just as exciting in some ways. If everybody has read the Medford Implementation Plan Review and Discussion, that's us. And I know it came out to us online, and now we have it in front of us. So I know in some quarters there was a lot of excitement about the quality of that plan.
I was really excited. So impressed with how they broke it down, actions and the role of the city and what the proposed tasks were and having a timeline, beginning and end date. And the more I read this, I just felt like, gosh, could we do this? I mean, couldn't little Ashland do a smaller model? Yeah, I mean,
not so much anymore.
Not so much.
They're getting these young, incredible,
smart moving forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was just like so blown away.
Yeah, I was too. And just to have the role of the city column for homelessness.
Right.
I mean, right there.
Right.
I was surprised.
To me, that was the linchpin, is that the city says, we're taking responsibility for this. We're going to lay it all out. And so it's not deflecting to other people. It's to say, and this is how we can move forward.
Okay, but it hasn't been adopted by the council.
Right.
It hasn't been adopted.
But I mean, but it's laid out so beautifully. I have an answer. So my question is, how come we can't ditto this?
Because there's a lot in here we could.
Yeah.
That we could just pull up. I wouldn't say all of it, but I agree.
Yeah, so what do you think?
Well, the difference is they have a committed, dedicated staff to make this happen.
Well, they're saying to make a dedicated staff person. Yeah, it's one of the actions.
Yeah.
I don't know that
they
actually
have one now.
I don't know.
The woman that put this together is a staff person.
I don't know if this is their only job.
Well, and they hired a consultant to do this. The Lazar Development Consultants put this
together. The plan.
So that's part of the reason it's very slick.
Okay, right. Echo.
So I did some research on Lazar. It's a company headquartered in San Diego. The founding member of LASAR is the spouse of a California State Assembly person. So there's been a little bit of political context around sort of the close relationship between those political interests and this independent agency. I'm skeptical about outside consultants because I've been around the university for so long, and I've seen us hire outside consultants who produce lovely looking reports that look just like this, and then they go into a drawer and nothing ever really happens. So what I'll be curious about is whether or not there actually is action on how many of these areas identified. The plan actually looks pretty good. I didn't find a lot of negative feedback online about LASAR's work. I looked at a report they did for the city of Pomona that was pretty cool about creating a consolidated centralized homeless services program that looked really inspiring, which we don't have money for. But so I think they look to be like a credible consultancy, but the issue is, will it actually get implemented?
Well, I think that's always the issue. I too am not fond of outside.
I'm always skeptical. Not always opposed, but skeptical.
Yeah, because I've seen that happen with the Ashland Chamber, you know, getting outside people, and they don't know us. First of all, we know us. I don't want to sound terrible, but this is beautiful, so why can't we just twist it a little? But our work, seriously, they've done the work for us. And,
what'd you say?
That's what Dennis wants.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, because they've done this work for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we know us. I would love to be able to put this together and present it to council for Ashland.
Well, we'll hold that thought. Yeah. That's a good one.
I like that thought.
I like that, too.
A big thought.
Yeah, but, I mean, and well, so do they have, they did hire somebody to do this?
Yeah, the LASAR.
I got to say, I was at one of the meetings when they were there creating this, and it was pretty good. I mean, they had community people together, and they asked them questions. And,
I love the collaboration.
And did that, and so then this came out. But it does, I mean, this took a lot of work to put it all together. Okay. So what is our thoughts about this? So we've got a schedule coming up for the next couple of months.
Well, we have a homelessness study session, so that's coming up this Monday, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to get the council looking and listening and talking about what do we do about homelessness. And so we have Dennis as our, you know, liaison. So it just seems to me that if we could, you know, sort of see what goes from there and then get the suggestion of getting a work group going, you know, that would focus on this.
Dennis and Kelly will both have copies of this because Kelly heard about this and was really interested. I think probably
good.
So, yeah, I think maybe other people will be thinking the same things.
Good.
Yeah, I think so, too. But I'm thinking maybe, you know, you let that homelessness study session bubble and get them all thinking. And I think a lot of people are going to show up for this.
I just feel like at the core of it is, what is the role of the city?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
now, absolutely.
The city of Ashland has consistently said, you know, we don't do social services.
Right.
We're not in this business. And so that's the critical shift that has to happen in order to move forward.
I agree.
Is Dennis going to talk about that at the study session?
I don't know. I don't know, but I know you have. I mean, I know Dennis and Tanya Graham. I mean, those two and Rich. They're very invested in wanting to find ways to support and help the homeless and just those in crisis in general in our town. So, but there's going to be a big change on the council. So you got a lot of people not running now. So you know, Dennis isn't running. Rich isn't running. I don't know about Julie. Does anybody know about Julie? And Gina is running, I think. Yeah.
You
so,
are,
So there's just a lot shifting here in the wind, but you know, we can be stable. We can be the stable ship that keeps moving forward.
On an aside, as we're talking about election stuff, I'm sorry that we didn't talk about this before. I emailed the policy out to you, and I hope that you guys had a chance to read them online. Please sign this and return it to us before you leave, so that we have a copy. But you're not on my mailing list yet, so I'll get it from you too. And it's essentially, as we go into this election season, what can we talk about? And I'll have a handout for you here pretty soon about when we can talk about things and when we can't. So,
what is
today? Is that okay? Did I use email?
No, okay. You didn't. Okay. It's just, it reminded me that we 27? Need to do this.
Yes.
I had a question. My question, should there be a regional approach based on this document?
No.
Talking to people in Talon and Phoenix, and the same, you know, everybody's on the same I-5 corridor here.
It's a great question, and it's just, and that's been the answer that's been given to me over the last several years, like last 4 years, when I've asked the question, how come we're not making more and more progress? Why aren't we? And then they give me this whole thing about, well, the regional response, and you got this group here, continuum of care, you got Jackson County, you got, you know, all these different groups, behavioral health, you got, I mean, you know, and they're all on separate islands. And so I really like the idea of us here trying to do something for Ashland and see if we can't be close to the problem and
get it. Council's pretty progressive these days. Right? Have they had a response to this?
I have no idea. Don't know.
Just remembering that Talent has much less staff people to put into their work, so they don't have quite the same resources. I mean, Medford, Ashland, Talent. So they may be politically into it, but whether they have the rest of the resources to do, I don't know.
So the question I have is, for Medford to produce a document like this, they're telegraphing their support for doing this.
Correct.
I don't get the feeling that Ashland is there.
Correct. Right. You're right.
And we could generate something like this, but we don't pull the levers. And it's just amazing when you read it. It's like the people in charge are doing the right thing for a change.
But they haven't adopted it.
That's right.
They have adopted it. It says here
they did.
This is the information.
There's still an implementation plan to follow.
I can't remember what she said in her email.
I thought the actual tasks were not agreed to yet, but I hope I'm wrong. That would be great.
It has dates. Implementation that passed offered.
So we attempted a regional meeting, a series of meetings about 2 years ago on addressing the issue of homelessness. And there were so many different municipalities with different rules and building codes, and, you know, it just didn't work because we had different goals. We had
Ashland, Talent.
Yeah.
Well, Central Point, Eagle Point, you got a lot of them out there.
So they're saying the plan is adopted as a roadmap for the city. And for support, you know, programs, plan, and then all actions are proposed for consideration or implementation in some capacity, right? So, and then the good news, 16 of the 32 are identified as priority actions based on advisory commission's prompted focus on priority actions that seek to accomplish the following. So, you know, that's a lot of verbiage of, well, we like this, it looks good.
Well, you know, they're expecting $3 million if they can corral the Republicans for
votes. I know, that's sad.
So they have the money that would allow them to do it.
And they're they're asking Rogue Retreat, how do you want to spend this?
Right.
What a nice problem.
It was just rolling on down and then it stopped.
Oh, man. What a great problem.
Here's what Angela wrote. She wrote, the implementation plan was adopted by council on November 21st, 2019. However, the full HSAP has not yet been adopted.
I think there's way more to the plan.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great to-do list. I mean, it looks awesome.
I mean, we could form a group that would just be a study group that we could be just keep pushing on it and keep bringing it up and start asking questions. Okay. And
so we're hopeful that our liaison might bring this up at the meeting on Monday with the expression of interest from the Housing and Human Service Commission to work in the same direction.
That'd be good.
Utilizing a lot of the work that Medford has done. And then we have the next meeting where we're kind of booked in, but then we could revisit it after that to see how we could pick it up and move it forward if the council was reasonably favorable.
Yeah. I like that.
I mean, if I was a council and I got somebody saying, here's a great plan, and you got a bunch of people that are willing to work, seems like that's a good deal.
A no-brainer,
but
yeah.
We'll see.
Could you meet with Dennis or talk with him between now and then and sort of push this as
like committee now?
Our preference?
I don't know.
Could we, as a body, agree to the statement you just made and draft it and then give it to Dennis or have one of us go and present that at the work session or just have it written and give it to Dennis?
Well, let's do it this way. Is there a consensus that we want to participate in a homeless plan modeled after Medford, and with city council support, we would be willing to help move that forward?
Yes.
Is that a consensus?
Yes.
So the question is, how do we communicate that?
I think Heidi's making a good suggestion. So if we pass a resolution and say,
We just passed that resolution. Well, we could do. I was going back to consensus. So would somebody like to make a motion to that same effect?
You want a motion that says somebody moves to let Dennis know that we'd like him
No. Just what I said. We've already got
right.
You move to adopt that.
Yes.
Okay.
As opposed to consensus, we're gonna do it from a motion.
I move what Rich said.
Heidi seconded. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, negative, and abstentions?
Who seconded? Okay.
I did.
Linda did.
Oh. Thank you.
Okay.
So we can send this verbiage from the minutes to Dennis along with the plan, and he can bring it up at the council.
And I'll give him a call.
Okay.
I didn't want to be the exact messenger.
That's great.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so hold on, we got one more.
I'd also like to say that based on this plan, he's the president of Providence Hospital. They rehabilitated a house and made it rent-free for a group of women, because they were inspired by this plan.
Wow.
Go
and,
away.
It's only, I think, 6 or 7 women, but
wow.
It's a start.
Wow.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great.
That's a new start.
Perfect. That was wonderful. I feel really good about that.
Okay.
Excellent.
Is that the Roy Vineyard guy?
Is that who?
So you're going to make sure Dennis gets the
Providence.
That's great.
Providence.
CEO is Roy Vineyard.
I don't know. It's whoever comes to the Jackson County Homelessness.
Can I talk to you just for a few minutes after the meeting?
Okay, now there was a lot of energy around that. That was great. Yeah. Okay. So now we got the next one, which is the consolidated plan overview. Woo-hoo! And so we've been looking at the introduction to that right over there. But
well,
this,
yeah, you got to put it up earlier, and they never okay. get it up at all.
So this, let me ask a question. How many read it?
I glanced through all of it.
Okay.
It's hard.
If anybody read it, yes, they'd be in trouble. But anyway, it's all right.
Some people.
Okay.
We've seen it before.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
A few times. Every 5 years, it comes up. And this format, I would say, so a lot of the document, just as a little background, is it's prescribed by the Code of Federal Regulations what has to be in it. And all of the data is tabulated, most of the data, some things we add, but most of the data is required to be in there by HUD, and that's why there's some of those charts that seem like, you know, this many people have one of four housing problems. But we're not going to tell you which problem they have, just that they have one of four. And so HUD has an agreement with Census that they get their own special tabulation of data, which is called CHAZ data. And that's what this data, most of this data is. And it's a little bit weird because it doesn't line up with, like, American Community Survey data. And it doesn't line up, like, with Census data because it's not really either of those. It does draw from those, but it's done at a different time and it takes different information. And so we work in a lot of, in the city, a lot of Census data. So a lot of the other information we have comes straight from either Decennial Census or American Community Survey. They don't always dovetail with the CHAZ data that's put out by HUD. That's my disclaimer, because every now and again there are things that don't line up. And that's why. So anyway, that's why the format is really weird and wonky. And I also have to tell you, when I submit this plan to HUD, I have to do it in HUD's database, which has all the sections broken out and gives me text box that I can put things in. And then I can add little text boxes if there's not enough room in the original box that they gave me, but they don't always give me the option to add text boxes. And I can also add maps and charts and tables, all of which are very awkward. And then what happens is that gets submitted to HUD, but it also prints out a copy for us. So it can say, oh, download this as a Word document. But then I have to go back into that Word document and fix everything because it comes out in a really weird way, and some things just come out as error. Or maps have suddenly disappeared. And that's also why sometimes the pages turn. Sometimes it's because they have to, but...
It seemed better this time.
I went back through and I cut and pasted and copied and deleted.
It's much better. I didn't see the error stuff.
I know. There was one more in there that I caught later.
That's great.
So anyway, if you see those things, it's generated from the computer formatting. But anyway, if there's anything in here that you see that needs to be corrected or fixed, let me know. I already did some corrections since I sent it out to you, things that were pointed out to me. And one of them is that I did not have the section completed on broadband, which is new for this year. There were two sections that were new, climate change and broadband, were added.
What page is that?
That's a good question. I think they're near the end. They might be section... really near the end. Although I just went through this document a million times and it just is... So it doesn't make sense to me.
I have a question.
I
have one too.
Okay, so go ahead with the question.
So, if you turn to the page 3 on the homelessness, page 3, paper 1, and first of all, I just want to say thank you for doing this. This is an amazing amount of work to put together here, so I think it's just incredible. And as I was reading through this, in the last paragraph at the bottom, it says, looking forward to the next five-year period. So it makes me realize this is the beginning. This plan is the 2020 to 2024, right?
Yep.
So it's the CDBG plan for the next 5 years. So, and it says city staff sees that in general the goals and strategies for the development and retention of affordable housing and for alleviating the issues of homelessness that have been outlined in previous consolidated plans will need to be continued. Well, I wasn't sure exactly what those strategies were. I see above in this paragraph you've listed instances of things, but I just wasn't quite sure on that. So just something to think about. It says, while the issues of homelessness and a lack of housing units affordable to low and moderate income households still exist in the Ashland community, this sentence, I'm thinking maybe there's a more positive way of saying this. It says, it is evident that their persistence is not due to a lack of successful implementation of identified strategies or to the efficacy of the strategies themselves, but rather to the enormity and complex nature of these multifaceted problems. So this sounds sort of highfalutin and sort of general, but like it's saying, we have really good strategies, and if it wasn't so hard and we could implement them, we'd be successful, but they're hard. Many of the factors that contribute to the problems are beyond the reach of jurisdictional policies and are certainly beyond the capacity of the CDBG program to address on its own. With consideration of those factors over which city policies can influence and which CDBG funds have impact, and this one is the one I really would like to just maybe give you some wording.
Sure.
But it says, the city feels that at this time, the strategies that the city has articulated in past consolidated plans have been addressing identified needs adequately and would not propose any adjustments or improvements at this time. And I'm very thankful that you're doing this difficult work. And I'm hoping that because look at what we did tonight. We're looking at a homeless implementation plan from Medford. We're talking about having a work study group from this group. We're talking about the council having a homelessness study session on Monday that they came up with on their own. And they're going to talk. So, I have chills. I'm like one of those people like, rah!
Yeah,
we're doing some good stuff. So what I was hoping for was maybe a sentence kind of like this. Ashland is committed to exploring more funding opportunities and refining current strategies in order to coordinate and develop sustainable resources for addressing homelessness in our community.
That's great.
Yeah.
Send it to you.
I just wanted us to be like, we're going to refine. You know, I understand we have our own strategies, but we can do better.
Yes.
And we proved it tonight.
Yes.
You know? And we need to get sustainable funding. We have got to figure out, you know, how to help our people on the street. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Well, no, I think that's great. And if you would send that to me. And you're
okay.
Right, I think it's hard if you haven't, like, been reading these plans for the past 5 years.
Right.
Because we've, like, each time we have, like, oh, here's our strategy for this.
And you've included that kind of comment and sentencing in the back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in here. I read it all the way to the end.
Wow.
And this wording you actually
that
have. There, no, I'm not. No.
No, I'm not.
You know, I just think that what we put into words, even if it's going to sit on a shelf, somebody's going to pull it and try to do a grant or see what do we stand for. Words mean something, you know, and I know it's a lot of gobbledygook, but you actually have a very similar wording in the back, very supportive of in working with Jackson County with their 10-year plan.
Oh, right.
And you include Ashland in there. I have it here somewhere. Here it is. Page 103 in the middle. So you talk about the board and the cities of Ashland, Medford, along with partner agencies working together. And it's talking about various funding opportunities, working to coordinate services to develop more resources. So you've actually, it's in here anyway. I figured you wouldn't be penalized.
No, that would be great.
Okay. Are you guys, is that okay?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
I'm with you, bro.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, hold on.
After that, my question is super tiny because hers was like, whoa. On page 22, I don't know what H-A-M-F-I is.
Oh, ham-fi.
Is that tasty?
Yeah, ham-fi.
Yeah, I know.
Can I have that for lunch?
Now that I'm saying it, I can't think of what it is. What is ham-fi? It is... I'm going to have to come back to you. I do know what it is, but
okay.
I'm totally blanking because you asked me.
And all right, well, I don't know what AMI is either on the next page.
We got all the acronyms.
So that's AMI. It's Area Median Income. And that's HAMFI is part of that.
That's what I would think.
Yeah,
because
it
has percentages
it's
up
like
on the top. But we ought to find out what it is.
Household area median family income. That's
okay.
What it
yeah.
is.
Yeah,
okay.
Very
that
good.
Makes sense.
Or yep. Something area median family income.
Right.
I don't know if it's households.
So I just sent it to you, and it's all the way at the bottom. So it's I copied part of what you already have there and bolded some things to think about, and then the wording's at the bottom. I sent it to Liz, too.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes I'm really negative when I write.
This is a great group. We're doing. It's going to happen.
This is probably after I had the conversation with HUD where they told me essentially.
It didn't matter.
No, they were like, well, that's funny that nobody wants your money down there because we do projects all day long in Seattle and Portland. And, you know, all over, and they're just like, it's just your developers. Your developers don't know how to use this money. They don't know how to deal with it. And I'm like, well, maybe that is true, and maybe it's not. Like, I don't know, but I have no control over them. Like,
yeah.
You realize that.
So
all I can do is say, I'll pay for that. I'll pay for that. I can say it all day long.
I suspect that other cities our size that are getting this amount of money.
There aren't any.
Really?
Well,
yeah. We're the smallest.
Yeah. We're the smallest.
Almost in the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm
wow.
telling
Sorry,
you.
Because that's the problem.
Is that is
there's
the problem.
A lot of regulations to meet
yes.
for a pittance of money.
Oh, yeah. No, it
I
is.
Get it.
Yeah. It is. And in fact, it's pretty weird that we get money at all and
right.
that we get such a teeny tiny amount of money that we hit our penalty faster. So these are the other things over which we just have no control. Like, we could spend that 15% all day long, right? Like,
yeah.
there's a million people
oh,
who can
yes.
use that money.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
But HUD doesn't let us do that.
Oh.
So, you know, we're always hamstrung with that regulation. We can never spend more than that
doesn't
on social services.
Doesn't Ben Carson want to get rid of regulations?
Actually, they want to get rid of CDBG funds.
They
right.
want to get rid of that.
There's zero in the proposed budget
really?
For CDBG. Because I was going to tell you that there's something that we can do, which is... there is a Section 108 loan that is available to us, which we've just never taken advantage of before because we haven't ever had money that just piled up and piled up. The Section 108 loan is essentially we bond 5 years of our allocation to one project. So we could take 5 years of our, like, we could take one consolidated
mm-hmm.
plan's worth of money, which is for us not quite $1 million.
Yeah.
And we could say, we'll take it all now. And then you just keep our allocation for the next 5 years, and we will use all that money to do one big project.
Wow.
So we have always had that option. We have just never had a project that we wanted to do that, tie up our money. At this point, obviously we wouldn't do it now, but we could wait and see. And so that was kind of where I was getting back to that pipeline conversation. If we saw something coming in the future, an opportunity, we could say, let's put all our eggs in that basket.
Ooh. Could that help with Aura in some way, in some of the...
I mean, if somebody wanted to buy it,
like if we wanted to do like a permanent winter shelter,
yeah. Right.
permanent
yeah.
year-round shelter,
yep.
yeah.
we could
yeah.
use that for that.
Well, we could use
yeah.
it to purchase the building or the land or put in public facility improvements, infrastructure in the public right-of-way. CDBG can be used for construction. There's all these
yeah.
rules about CDBG.
Yeah, cannot be used.
And it can't be used, I mean, only that 15% can be used for actual services. So, you know, that's like that complaint that people get, like, oh, they built all these new buildings and now they're all empty. Well, yeah, they can pay for the buildings because there's money for that, but there's no buildings to pay, or no money to pay for the people to work
right.
in them.
I mean, it's we have to find, like, a developer who will buy the Super 8 Motel, totally rehab it, and get it ready to go, and then invite the organizations in to do all the navigation and counseling and
see,
get them to the resource
center. We can pay for the hotel, and we can pay for the rehab with this money.
But who can handle the
can
buying
the
of a motel?
That's the thing. We need someone. Rover Tree bought a motel
don't.
Once.
I'll be talking to you later.
Close to Safeway, right around the corner from. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so
a little bit. We can move beyond the cover page. For those of you who are newer, this is just the history of and background. The city of Ashland receives, you know, right now about $175,000 a year in CDBG funds. And they have to, you know, benefit low and moderate income people. And as a condition of this, we essentially have to write this plan, which I tend to call our five-year grant application. And it has specific things that we need to assess, such as housing and homelessness, and a lot of other things that are in here. And then through this process, we identify spending priorities. And we've been doing this every 5 years since 1995. And then just, you know, what is this plan? And we talked about that. It's an assessment of all these different aspects and community input, which is the part that's missing right now. And then this is where we're getting to the part that's missing. So we can totally go through, or if you guys have corrections, Heidi, if you have edits, I know often you do see things that I don't see, please feel free to send them to me, and I will take care of them before it comes back to you. It's already been suggested that I add the housing strategy, the regional housing strategy plan to it. So I'll do that before it comes back to you. But the piece that's really going to happen before it comes back to you next time is that we will have finished our community input piece. So right now, there's a lot of things in here that you might have noticed where there's publication dates and public notice dates that haven't happened yet.
Yes.
Because I have to get those all lined up because they have like 30 days, 15 days, and all these things. So they're all in here already. And at this point, I just assume we don't have any feedback, but that's just a placeholder. And traditionally, we don't have any feedback. So that's why it's written in there. But it will all get updated once we've gone through that process. But right now, what we're in the process of is gathering that community input.
The Engage Ashland survey,
yes.
And
so
you had 37, but now it's gone up. Because
it has gone up. We had an article in the newspaper,
right.
And then it went out to the Homeless Task Force. We have to check in with agencies. We have to check in with citizens. We have to have a way to get their information. And for us, which we've done this in the past, we've done a variety of things. But for us, the easiest thing to do is have some sort of chart that gets spit out so we can see things in a really easy way. So in previous plans, affordable housing preservation and development have always ranked as the highest need. And then homelessness services or homeless services. And then based on the feedback that we've received so far, that's true. And some of you may have gone here. I was primarily just looking at things that were identified by people as critical and beyond 50%. But as things change, we will evaluate those, and so we'll bring those forward. But I wanted to take you to, can I do it? I wanted to take you to the online feedback. So Brandon has rights to post these, so he creates this in this format, this Engage Ashland format.
But I don't think, do we have the same thing that you're looking at?
Oh, why isn't it?
I don't know, but it's not talking.
Dadgummit. How do I make it do that? You know what's weird? I've been looking at things all night.
Can you check it? I mean, like, it looks like a box.
That's so weird. Dang it. That's the whole reason I wanted to do it this way.
All right.
I wonder how I can make it happen. Dang it. I'm so sorry.
You can't, like, click on it?
I am.
Oh.
I don't know where the other thing...
Because it looks like... It would work.
I know.
It's underlined. Same thing that's up there.
I did click on it. That's how I'm. So on my screen, I have it open.
Oh, I see.
Let me see if I get rid of this. What do you see now?
Same.
The same thing. Stuck.
Try hitting escape and see what happens.
Escape.
Aww. Aww. You made us all happy. Is there anything? Wait, is there anything down below though? Any of those that would get you to it?
That E, which is funny because this is not what my screen looks like.
Okay,
at
so
all.
Can you get to the E?
Well, I just minimized it.
Where did it go?
Okay, here we go. Where are you? It's in the internet. Oh, here's the E.
Yeah,
okay, let's see.
The
try the E.
Yeah. It's not letting you go to Edge on the screen, on the big screen.
What? What's this? Dell touchpad. No, that's not helpful.
I can't go up there and touch it, can I?
No. No.
Boom. That's right.
That is so weird. No, it shouldn't have.
I took the survey. Did any of you take the survey?
Lord. All I wanted to do was show you where it was at, but what I really wanted to tell you, you can do it, right? You can go online and you can bring it up and you can see the feedback and you can see the chart, but that's only the registered users. Other people are not registered users and they show up on the back end. So when it shuts down, Brandon will print it out from all the users. And he said there's hundreds.
Okay.
So there's a lot more feedback than is showing on the front page that we can access.
That didn't want to give their name, didn't want to give their address, didn't want to say what organization.
Exactly, because you have to register in order to do it. So it's only tracking registered users on the front side, but on the back side it's all users. And so Brandon said there were a lot more that we're just not seeing. And so that could skew some of that data. And then a lovely woman who works with the DHS was kind enough to make hard copies and conduct them with clients at the DHS office.
Nice.
So I'll take those back in and see if I can get them into here. And if I can't, we'll figure that out, which we've done before and it was kind of messy. But anyway, so all of that information will come back and it will fill in these sections. And I guess we'll have to go, I'm so sorry that that didn't work. And I had it all set up thinking I was going to be on top of it, and now...
Could we all come around and see your thing on the...
I can't even get it open now.
I won't even let you open PowerPoint again?
Well, I minimized it, and now it's gone. Where is it? All my icons are these weird little things down there. That's the PowerPoint.
Okay, we got 20 minutes.
All right, well, I can actually get through this really quickly. Now I have to go back to wherever my other PowerPoint is because this isn't even the one that I had opened before. And that way you don't even see that.
Mm-hmm.
That is just weird.
Okay.
Now update on the...
Okay, now you're back.
Got the plan.
Yeah, so I just wanted...
And now you're in. Okay.
Yeah. I just wanted to go through. Okay. So this was the page we were on.
Yes.
And then these are the goals from 2015-2019 with their numerical values. So in this document, there's a section where you put in what your goals are, and we probably won't change those unless something comes up through the survey process that sort of makes us add something new. The reason these are here is because these are the range of activities that we can do with this money, so we need to have a placeholder for all the things. Like, we really never do economic development. I have never done an economic development project here, but we could do one, so I leave it in there.
Okay.
Just because.
Yeah.
It's there. And when people apply, we tell them to look at this document, and if it's not in there, then they probably shouldn't apply for it, so we just need to make sure there's a placeholder. So all these things will be in there, but these numeric values will change. And as I said, we will probably change the number of housing units completed, created, rental units, and ownership units, because we're just not meeting those targets. But we're blowing out of the water all the ADA and rehab stuff, because that's what people can do. So I'm probably going to up those, decrease the other ones, probably increase the homeless services. So I'm just letting you know that these were what we had before. I'm going to increase ramps because what we're going to do to expend our money is we're going to give Public Works a bunch of money to install handicap ramps. It's not the best thing to do, but it's the thing that's going to expend a bunch of our money, that's always online, it's something that's eligible. So I'll come back with a proposal next meeting for that.
Just to show you some of the services, though, when you say rehab and or help, you know, helping others, Aura got 379 individuals helped to stay in their houses, prevented 379 people. This is in 1 year. 154 of those people were children. 180 families were in that group that were prevented from being evicted. They avoided eviction.
And those things are huge.
Huge.
So
they just aren't housing units.
Would it be possible to give some of the remodel of Pioneer Hall some CDBG money because it serves emergency shelter or has in the past?
So that's
a good question.
That's been asked before.
They asked it at the city council meeting.
And, I mean, we would be happy to do that, and we can do that. We can give money to both those buildings. But if we do, those buildings can
not be used.
Can't be used. It's the Grove all over again. 51% of the time, they have to be used for that purpose. And people who use them have to be income qualified.
So that's strings.
The parks does not want those strings. No. And income qualifying, everyone who uses that building, either one of those would be a real administrative burden. So it's not really a shell game in the sense that we give Public Works money to put in ramps and they can use that money to rehab buildings, because I guess those are different funds.
I have a question, this is not the right time to ask it, but I want to ask it before I forget, and somebody can talk to me about it later.
Okay.
Safe parking areas for people living in their RVs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to know more.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you a little bit more about that, because it's expanding in Ashland.
Because I drive down Water Street all the time.
Right.
And, so somebody talk to me about that.
So anyhow, these adjustments will be made based on agency feedback, housing developed target, and just this is all of what I said, and then I just wanted to open it up to any suggestions that you guys had regarding the whole plan.
God, it's just how I love that. What did you guys pipeline? The pipeline, and being able to maybe bring some of the Section 8 people or whoever those, I know the name Jason Elsey, that's the only one I know, but bring those people in the same room with the providers of services to see how we can form a partnership.
And that's what's been going on at the Continuum of Care.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's how Maslow is in with this project with the Housing Authority. I mean, all the people are siloed, really, and there's a bit of the competitive piece, right? Like, people are competing for the same funds.
It's just often. Ashland, developing in Ashland is very difficult.
We don't have a lot readily buildable land. Even that piece of property out on East Main, not in the city, it would need to be annexed. It's
a big vacant lot behind my house.
Really?
Brent Thompson's. Glen Street. The technical address is 345 Glen, but it's vacant. It's undeveloped property. It's at least an acre and a half, if not two.
Oh, yeah, I know where that is, yeah.
So he's owned it for decades.
One thing that we talked about with that piece of property on East Main, what would be the challenge to developing it? Well, it's not annexable. You need the first piece, the big piece, because that's the one that's adjacent to the urban growth boundary.
Right.
There's no public facilities out there. And so all of that has to be brought in by the developer. All of the
sewer,
which is crazy expensive.
The water.
Sidewalks.
Mm-hmm,
there's all of that public infrastructure that would need to be brought in by whomever develops it. So those are huge barriers, just that cost of that piece.
But you could build around it. And you could still have a shelter and a resource center, and then have some really nice condos and different things that would fit in. And the neighborhood is used to us now, and we're getting along with the neighbors.
Well, and so this is back to that pipeline thing, which is like this is a big. That's a
and
big,
10 acres,
and it's a lot of
10
other
acres,
partners. And so, how do we get lined up to be ready for when that is available? So this is just the timeline that we have. So I just wanted to wrap up with this, which is essentially, here we are now, you're reviewing it and making some recommended changes. It's going to come back to you in March at your next meeting, so we'll have to have some time to do that. At that time, it's a public hearing, so we'll take public testimony if anyone comes to talk about it. And then we'll incorporate the feedback, and so the draft that you'll see will be different. It will incorporate those things, but I'll just briefly go over that with you, any of those changes. And then, you guys would make a recommendation to council, because the next piece is it goes to council for another public hearing in April at the same time that we do the CDBG piece. And then after that, it comes back, and I submit it to HUD, and then there's another 15-day piece for HUD that they can get feedback on how we did the process. One thing I wanted to say was that I heard from a subcommittee of the Climate Energy Action Plan Commission, I think that's their name, and they want to have some input on this. So you may be receiving a written recommendation from them about ways that this plan could incorporate some of those climate energy action plan pieces, or they may come and speak in public hearing.
Tell them to bring some developers who want to put in solar on those roofs, right? Yeah. And electrical chargers, and we want them. Bring their friends.
Well, this has certainly been an exciting conversation.
Yes, indeed.
We're moving towards 10 minutes.
Well, I'm done.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for being part of that. And I think that, I guess my concern was when we get the revisions, is it all right if we only get them online? I mean, in emails instead of, we would just save this, and it's easier actually for this size of document. So that would just save us. Is that all right?
It also takes a long time to put the package.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Well, then we would save that. All right.
Save Liz.
I know that some people just have an easier time and then write notes. And,
I
know I don't see things on the screen that I see in print.
I could print them out myself if I really need to.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm happy to do whatever works best.
Thank you.
Great. Well, I want to thank Jackie for starting us off with that. And I think we can feel good that when we actually go to the city with a recommendation about CDBG, we can be excited about it instead of just pro forma.
Yeah.
And so I think those are very vital things for us to do. On the liaison report,
I have an idea.
You have
relating to an SOU liaison.
Okay.
Which is vacant. So I got in touch with one of my old buddies who's the director of student involvement and leadership at SOU. He gave me three names of staff / student leaders who he thinks might well be appropriate and useful and able to commit for at least a year.
Nice. That's great.
And so if you're all okay with that, I can get in touch with those people and see if I get a bite.
And if you do, I think I would or other people might be willing to meet with them if they had questions.
That'd be awesome.
You know, if they're kind of like, what is this thing?
One person's the new director of the QRC. I can't remember the name. My computer died, so I can't tell you who they are, because I can't count them.
You know them? Alex?
And then another young person who's in the Outdoor Adventure Leadership Program and something else. And I forget my computer battery just went, so I can't go into more detail. But I got three names for you.
But we'd only choose one.
Only choose one.
Okay.
But that's, you know, with the
cool. Thank
out
you.
Of three, somebody might actually
that's great.
Bite.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
great.
Because somebody who could talk about what's happening with student family housing and student rental issues would be very helpful for this.
Yes. Yeah,
it would be.
Tough.
So do you have a staff liaison?
Probably. I don't know.
I mean, you don't have to. I mean, it's...
I'm just trying to think of what happened in the last month or anything.
just for a question, when it says city staff in the consolidated report, who is city staff?
Well, for the
I know
most
it's
part,
you.
It's me, but generally it's me, Bill, and Brandon.
Okay. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, thank you for that.
Yes, thank
so
you.
So, under nice. Announcements, I had one. Does anybody
that's
else have...
easier.
Announcements in general? Well, I would just say that one of the groups that is meeting out there is a CCO-based group doing housing with a lot of focus on homeless in the Community Health Improvement Plan. So they've got about 25 folks, and Linda has gone, and I filled in for her at the last one, but I'm also on the Jackson Care Connect Community Advisory Committee, so I'm going to be going to those meetings. And they are trying to address what is the plan that could actually use some CCO resources to do the housing at the social determinants of health, including homeless. So that is being developed at that level, and it could be another resource for us.
And that's the regional world echo that he's
right.
talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to check. He knows regional.
I mean, there's a lot of bureaucracy within that, but there is also people that do care from a, particularly from a health standpoint, about what are we doing about homeless in affordable housing?
You know, the CCOs are now contracting with the Kelly Shelter to provide funding.
Right.
And they have funding through June now.
Got a few months.
More money coming in. Earlier, when I talked about the warming
center.
It is an actual building, and there have 40 beds.
Grants Pass you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Grants Pass.
So it's not just a warming shelter, it's actually
Well, it's called a warming shelter because they got it approved. Different regulations than a shelter.
Much easier.
But they are only open when the weather is at a certain point.
Yeah. So it's an emergency warming center.
But yeah.
But great. But I mean, that's great. Yes,
it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we got 5 minutes. Not hearing anything else, we'll adjourn the meeting 5 minutes early. And I just want to say thank you guys for a really spirited meeting. That was good.
I think just really got the juices flowing.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. We got to go now. We're going to do stuff.
And we're going to do stuff.
Did everybody turn in their thingy bobbers?
Yeah.
I want to make sure Linda is going to get the city recommendation out to us.
Which one?
You'll have yours next
month. I'll take a picture.
I think it's so many.
So that they're going to come to us in email. So I'll just check in. So Liz, we want to be guaranteed we're going to get the
I'm pretty sure.